Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of Continuing Mission is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and to help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/TrekFM. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there. Hello, and welcome to Edition 50 of Continuing Mission. I'm your host, Tony Robinson. Take a listen to this.
The universe never listens to mere organic beings, but you have a lot of hope aimed in your direction.
We are pushing the ship's slipstream drive as much as we dare in response to the distress call from USS Cassandra.
The question also arises, are you part of Section 31?
Captain, if I may ask, why are we raising shields?
The assassin was tracked down but killed herself before she could be taken prisoner. I'm going to start an analysis based on these scans. Try to figure out what kind of planet her people come from.
Death sometimes seems an entity, some being that waits or maybe follows us all. A shadow, and we cannot see what casts this shadow. But we know that shadow.
I suspect you know something, Ensign. I suspect that very strongly.
Sounds exciting, doesn't it? What you've just listened to is an excerpt from a new Star Trek audio production by David McDowell Blue, who is my very special guest on Continuing Mission today. David graduated from the National Shakespeare Conservatory in New York, eventually playing such iconic roles as Jacques in As You Like It, Stephen Undershaft in Major Barbara, The Fool in King Lear, Malvolio in Twelfth Night, Goldberg in The Birthday Party, etc. He's a director whose credits include Heartbreak House by George Bernard Shaw, The Public Eye by Peter Schaeffer, his own edit of Richard III by William Shakespeare, and most recently the original Maisoch and de Sade by Omen Cain. He was born in San Francisco, a great place to grow up if you're a Star Trek fan. And he has obviously been influenced by his time in San Francisco, even though he was raised in Florida, by writing and producing his own brand new Star Trek audio fan production called Chronicle. David is here with us today to discuss his new production. And so without further ado, we are getting into the turbo lift, we're going to 10 forward, and we're going to have a chat with him. Welcome to Continuing Mission, David McDowell Blue. How are you?
I am feeling pretty good today. Thank you.
Wow. I have to say from the outset, although people won't notice this, as we go from episode 49 to episode 50, it's been a year since I did my last Trek FM Continuing Mission, so I hope people haven't noticed the gap. Or wait a minute, I hope they have noticed the gap.
Yeah.
But why aren't they complaining? Anyway, there we go. Anyway, here you are, and there you are, and here I am.
Yes.
So I'm talking to you from the UK. We've got a huge time difference. You're in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I want to know how you got into the business in a kind of a lead up to what we're going to talk about in a few moments, which is your audio production. But how did you start, and tell us a bit about your background?
Well, my primary background is essentially in live theater. And I have a degree in Bachelor of Arts in Theater Arts. I attended and graduated from the National Shakespeare Conservatory in New York City. I have directed plays. I have acted in many plays. I've been very fortunate to get some really, really great parts, although I don't primarily act anymore. These days I write, I direct, and I am a reviewer. Although every now and then I am pulled into doing a role. So that's my background in terms of, you know, that I am a creator of dramatic works. I've written plays and many times, and I, you know, wanted to, I'm ambitious that way to do much, much more.
Okay. And your plays embrace different subject matter, or is it always about the character, or is it about the storyline, or is it about a moral or an ethic?
I find that in terms of content, my plays are almost entirely centered around using some, for lack of a better term, pop form of mythology to explore, as a metaphor, to explore something. I'm interested in stories that ask questions and don't allow easy answers. I like stories, or I hope I write stories, where the multitude of characters have an arc, that they all do surprising things that still make sense, and that there is a compelling narrative that is hopefully exciting and surprising. I find my own writing tends to be somewhat in the same structure as a murder mystery. That to me, it's very much like setting up clues, because setting up clues can also function as setting up expectation. And then to thwart that expectation, because life surprises you. It is not easy. It will make a surprise. There, I'm repeating myself. Anyway, but that's the sort of stuff I have liked to do. For example, when I really, really returned to playwriting, I wrote a long one-act play that's an adaptation of my favorite Gothic novella, which is 1871's Carmilla by Joseph Sheridan Le Fanu. I am also working on an adaptation of The Great God Pan by Arthur Machen, which can't be put on in your neck of the woods for several more years, because that's in the public domain in the United States, but not in Europe.
Is that because of, am I confusing him with Peter Pan and J.M. Barrie, or is there any connection there?
Yes, you're confused. There's no, the only connection would be was where J.M. Barrie maybe got the name Pan.
Right.
The Great God Pan is an 1897 novella that is kind of, it was considered almost pornographic at the time, and you read it today and you just go, why? But it essentially is the telling of the coming to earth of an avatar of the Greek god Pan, or what the Greeks called the great god Pan.
Right.
In the form, of course, of a woman, who is, in effect, in terms of the story, it's the story of the Antichrist coming to Victorian London.
Wow.
And I'm also writing, I've written a comedy, very short play, based on the superhero genre. And I'm working on a play that is kind of, I like it to call it a blend of A Little Mermaid with H.P. Lovecraft's A Shadow Over Innsmouth. And that is called The Deep Kind. And I'm working on that. That's, yeah. Yeah, that gives you, I think, some idea. I'm very interested in, like, marginalized people and unusual time periods. And as I said, I'm interested in the genre as being used as a metaphor for aspects that come up in turn, you know, treating them as mythology. In that,
You know, Joseph Campbell had that wonderful quote of saying that the individual's mythology is their dreams, but society's dreams are their mythology.
Wow.
So that's where I'm coming from.
Excellent. I'm trying to see a line that takes you from what your interests are to what you're about to embark on. And so I guess I have to start with asking a very basic question. What does Star Trek mean to you?
Star Trek, which I, by the way, began, I'm of an age that I watched it when it was first broadcast.
You and me both.
Yeah. So, and it did capture my imagination. And one of the things that really has always grabbed me about Star Trek, even though the older I got, the more and more I realized that as science fiction, it belongs in the same grouping with Flash Gordon in terms of its scientific accuracy. It's this jumble of, but it's an internal universe that essentially works, and especially works on a visceral, emotional level. And it had works that way on me. I, as a storyteller myself, and as the rebirth of Star Trek happened with the Next Generation, and then it seemed to go into eclipse after Voyager and then Enterprise ended. There was a lot of talk in Star Trek fandom in the very, very nascent internet fandom that existed at the time about what should be next. By then, I was thinking of my own ideas, because frankly, I'd always, from a kid, from a young child, I'd always wondered, what's going on with the other ships?
Yeah.
Who's on them? Who are the characters on them? So I had a basic idea, which I discussed in some forums at the time, when right after Voyager went off. And I found rather shocking that my idea that appealed most to me completely horrified a fistful of ardent fans who were berating me and telling me that I am totally wrong, that is an evil idea, that I am promoting a terrible, terrible thought. And even then, before I really realized, I'm more mature now, of course, but even then I had some sort of feeling that, wow, this is a powerful idea. It gets this much of a reaction. Wow, this should definitely be made. But I was thinking this is just an idle thought. Then, of course, in the decades since, there's been an enormous explosion of fan films and fan series. And I was interested in all that idea, but then also I'm practical enough to look at it and just go, I can never afford to do a fan film, quite apart from the fact I don't have the expertise. But I could do an audio series, because it's unimaginably how cheap the costumes, the lights, the sets, the special effects are in an audio series where you see nothing.
Well, I would argue that point and say that in audio, you've actually got the best special effects and the most expensive and accurate uniforms imaginable.
Ah, but I wasn't saying the best uniforms. I was saying cheap. I was saying inexpensive ones.
Inexpensive, yes. Yeah.
Yes.
But totally screen accurate.
Sure. Yeah. Because I'm sort of visually minded for Chronicle, I actually did in my own mind kind of think up what are their uniforms look like.
Hmm.
And I did think, I did have sort of an idea of what the hero ship of the series would look like. And I even paid an artist on DeviantArt $60 to actually create the ship.
Well, if you have an image of that and you can send it to me, I'd like to see it and share it with our listeners.
Absolutely.
And that would be cool.
Is a visionary class starship that is just coming into service in the year 2410 of the Common Era.
Wow.
So that's well after Nemesis. That's even after Picard, come to think of it.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're gliding into Chronicle. Mm-hmm. And I've listened to the trailers and I've listened to the teasers. And I have to say that they excite me a great deal.
Yay.
They do, because there's elements in there that, you know, if this was a movie trailer and the screen was dark and it was just a star field and a few hints that it's related to Star Trek, then the voices would convey the excitement. And that's exactly what's happening here. So you can close your eyes and listen to the warbles and the whistles and the background noises and listen to the dialogue, the type of which you would expect from Starfleet officers engaged in various activities. And you can imagine that you are joining in on board the USS, whatever, and listening to the activities going on around you and getting involved in the adventure. So I'm quite impressed by the trailer. What I really want to know is what's going to happen next.
Well, of course, I'm not going to tell you everything.
No!
I'm giving you the basis.
That's it.
Yeah.
End this program. just kidding.
Quite simply, Chronicle is, and I will tell you right now up front, the hero ship is not the USS Chronicle. There is a reason it is called Chronicle, but that is a clue that will eventually be, the meaning of which will eventually be revealed. The story takes place, as I said, in 2410. It focuses on four young officers, two of whom have just graduated from Starfleet Academy. The other two graduated about a year earlier, and they have all four been assigned to this spanking new starship that is the fastest starship the Federation has ever made. It's called the Visionary Class, and it has a working slipstream drive, which, as you may make people remember from Voyager, that is a type of much faster than warp travel you have to take trillions of things into account constantly to keep the ship in the slipstream. And if you make a mistake, it's thrown out of slipstream and maybe torn in half. So it's very, very difficult. So basically my thought was that this class, the Visionary Class, has a dedicated warp computer core that does nothing but do everything it needs to keep the slipstream operating. But even so, they can only keep the slipstream working for about 45 minutes. And then the computer system has to be reset, which is so complex that it takes about 2 days to do that. But it still is a huge improvement. And so, yeah, as you can see, serious, serious nerd. Am I? The Visionary Class, there's three of them at the moment, as is mentioned in the trailer. And these are part of Project Perseus. Now, again, this is me being just a science geek. Our galaxy is divided up into galactic arms, and we are in what is roughly called, and I'm being very, 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 you know, cliff notes here. We are in the Orion/Sagittarius arm, and that is the Federation, the Klingons, the Romulans, the Gorn, all these people are in that arm. The next arm out is the Perseus arm, and there is a gap between them. It's not as empty as the gap between galaxies, but it is, there are not many stars there. They peter out pretty quickly, and then there's a long chunk of space that's relatively empty for a galaxy. And then eventually you get to the other side. And it would take up till now, the fastest ship the Federation has going full out, 5 years to cross that gap. It will take the Visionary Class 4 weeks. So this is like the next grand thing of exploration. And the three ships are, because they're Visionary Class, they're named the USS Witch of Endor, which is our hero ship, the USS Cassandra, and the USS Merlin. We can sense a scheme here.
Yes.
Yes. And the four characters who are aboard the USS Witch of Endor are going to find themselves at the center of a storm. They are very, very they're very promising young people. That's why they were chosen for this mission. And what they are finding is that the Federation's expectations are going to be very, very badly shattered. Because at this point, I was thinking that the Federation, or going with the established timeline, the Federation has defeated, evidently, the Borg. The Borg are not a problem anymore. The Dominion are not a problem anymore. The Romulan Star Empire, well, their home system went poof. They're still trying to put things back together. And the Klingons bled themselves white in a civil war, then a war with the Cardassians, then the war with the Dominion. So they're trying to, you know, they're in trouble. They're just, they've weakened themselves considerably. They're firmly expecting that they're going to meet a bunch of people who will become friends and are going to join the Federation ultimately. So I'm going with that. And so the Federation is now the big boy on the block. And it's very, and they're very sure that they deserve this status. And they're about to get a very rude surprise.
Excellent. So the story arc is going to take place over 9 episodes that you have in mind? 18 episodes.
There are 18 episodes for the first season. If there's enough interest, I will complete the story in a second season.
Okay. And each story will take how long to tell?
Each episode is a little under 10 minutes.
Okay. Can I just ask about your cast? Who are the people voicing the characters? Or let's even start with how many characters or major characters are involved?
There are about 15 speaking parts.
Okay.
Of whom I would say there are 8 or 9 major characters.
Okay. And are any of those the voices that we've heard on the trailer? Or are
Yes, almost all of them. I've heard almost all the major characters in the trailer.
Wow. I just referring back to the trailers, which I encourage everybody to find on YouTube and have a listen. It could be the my imagination, but I think I'm hearing familiar voices in there. I think I'm hearing voices I've already heard.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
One of them is, well, for example, Leslie Sawyer, the so-called super fan. And she has been in so many fan films, and she is playing a young Vulcan ensign named Vanel. And her voice is definitely in the trailer. I think you know Vance. Do you know Vance Major?
I've never spoken with him. I contacted him briefly about coming on this show, and I have to apologize if he is listening. I will come back, because he has done sterling work, and you know he has been a great contributor to fan fiction.
Oh God, yeah,
fan made movies, yeah.
The thing is, we lost a cast member, and he had said he owed me one because I just gave him $5 in a crowdfunding thing. And I said, "Well, could you do this one role?" And he was thrilled. Yeah, he can't see. He'd never gotten to play a Vulcan before, so without having the makeup. There's a gentleman named Scott Fack, who is playing Zachary Stiles. He was involved in another audio series, Star Trek audio series, Dr. Hangler, MD. Let's see. We have some of these people some of these people are professional actors. The actress playing Athena Azarian, who is her voice was on the trailer. She's a professional actress. You may have seen her in an independent film or a commercial or something. Heidi is a professional actress. Oh, there are several professional actors in the cast, so you could have easily heard them elsewhere.
I tend to have an ear for incidental things, things that happen in the background. I think this is coming from my childhood, when I was the kind of person who would, when I went to a movie, I'd almost take my eyes off the lead actor and see what was happening over on the right side of the screen.
Oh, good for you.
Or the left-hand side of the screen. What's that guy doing and who is he? And lesser. And that way, for me personally, although I never got a job as a continuity person, I think I would have been excellent as a continuity person, because I can never figure out how certain glaring mistakes occur in movies. But anyway, we're getting off topic. But on this side of the pond, forgive me if I'm unfamiliar with some of the people you've got in your production.
That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. How did you recruit them, or did you know them, or you had an idea and somebody just, they said, look, we volunteer, we'd love to be part of it?
Some people I know, because after all, I'm embedded in the theater community here in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I also put out the call to people I knew on Facebook and in various Star Trek groups and some other places, saying, I'm doing this audio series. I would love if people could audition. And different people were interested. I tried to use as many as I could that I thought could be used. One of them is not an actor at all, but they have written a great deal of fan fiction. And they make audio recordings of the fan fiction. So they said, here, you can get right here and listen and hear my voice. And that person has an extraordinarily interesting voice, one that really stands out and seemed to be saying something. There was something real there. So that person was cast. Other people were just actors I knew. Others were people who just contacted me or people I'd heard of. The fact of the matter is, along the way, we lost some cast members. Sometimes I don't know why in some cases.
I saw an appeal from you recently for somebody to come along and take up a position.
Yeah. Well, someone was willing to do it and they tried to do it and it became just impossible because of their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I
was that a female voice or a male voice you were looking for?
Well, actually, that happened twice. It was one of each.
Okay. All right.
Sure.
So can you tell us something about the storyline?
Yes, certainly. The main thing, of course, is that The Witch of Endor is going to be on its own. So it sets off on this mission. But before that, the four young officers have to arrive, and along the way something happens. There is a murder, specifically a relative of one of the characters is murdered. This happens in the first episode, so I don't feel like I'm giving away, but the fact of the matter is that a Vulcan's grandfather is murdered. And, you know, there aren't many Vulcans. There aren't many murderers among Vulcans. And they track down the killer, who kills herself. And then they start doing a complete scan. She looks Vulcan, but the interior is completely different. And they also find that she doesn't match anything in anybody's files. They have no idea what species she is.
So she's not a Romulan spy?
Not at all. No. Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. That would be so obvious.
The biochemistry is completely wrong. Although she is Vulcanoid.
Hmm.
That is, she has pointed ears and upswept eyebrows. But it's one of the determining factors. They find out that she did change her skin color.
Hmm.
She's not the color of a Vulcan. She's blue. Like an Andorian or a Bolian, but she's definitely not an Andorian or a Bolian.
All right.
So, and they just, they, and her, you know, they look at the DNA, they look at the anatomy, and they say, this does not match anyone or anything we've ever seen before. So, why did she kill him?
Wow.
And that's the first mystery. And later, as they, and this mystery, as you know, these four officers are going off on their mission, it's been left unsolved. But the investigator in charge is remaining in contact with them, and as much as he can. So there's, and he later gives them more clues that he's found. Like there are, you know, he's checked the records, and aliens that match that description have been spotted, but not inside the Federation. But they've been seen, like, in Cardassian space, in Orion space. Just going around doing stuff. Just a few, but they stand out.
I was going to say blending in, but you said standing out. So
yeah, that, stand.
Blending well, because, in while standing out.
Well, because they're blue Vulcans, so they kind of stand out.
Yes.
Okay, who are they? Nobody knows. Nobody knows.
We eventually find out.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We'll find out who they are, why they killed that officer, what they have to do with Project Perseus.
Can I just throw my 2 cents worth in and say, I know who they are. They're Smurfs.
Oh, if only.
From the planet Smurfia. Tell me I'm right.
If you insist, sure. You're right. You're right. You're not. But I'll tell you.
Oh no! I've ruined it. I've ruined it for everybody.
So, yeah, that's the first mystery, and then a series of other mysteries happen as it becomes clear that it, on at least one other of the visionary class ships that have now they're now well on their way outside Federation space, that there was a saboteur. And the thing is, how did a saboteur end up on the most advanced ship in Starfleet? And of course, this immediately sparks paranoia. Is there one on board our ship? And who is it? And some of our characters come under suspicion.
Well, when are you ready to release episode one?
That will be in January.
This is coming in January 2020.
2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
we'll be getting at a character teaser almost every single Friday between now and then.
Fantastic. I wanted to just come back to another subject, which is always wraps itself around when somebody is promoting a fan movie or a fan production or something to do with let's make this happen. It's a Star Trek fan thing. Mm-hmm. And it's always the subject of raising funds. I don't know, and I don't think you are raising funds for this production in any traditional way. And that's kind of refreshing.
Well, I mean, what would I spend it on?
Well, no, I don't mean what you would spend it on, I do mean what you'd spend it on. I didn't mean you personally what you'd spend it on. But most people have to spend that money on people's time, renting a place to record or film, and in some cases, but not in your case, building sets and donning uniforms. Well, you can rule those last two out, of course, but still it costs a certain amount of cash to get a production done.
Well, here's the thing. And I got some advice from people who'd done Star Trek audio series. I said to people, please make the recordings of your part. Please do 3 takes of the entire scene, pausing for the other person to speak. Do so in as quiet an environment as possible. Label them this way and send them to me. I am going to piece them all together with the sound effects. So, and I will tweak them as much as possible to make them sound as close as I can. So I didn't have to rent a studio, which is good because like one of my cast members is in Michigan, another is in New Zealand, another is in Atlanta. So
that's good, because I noticed one of the voices. I was going to come around and say that you almost expect everybody's voice to have a kind of an American tone, but some voices do not reflect that American accent. Mm-hmm. I don't know who it is on the trailer has what I'll call a different accent, but he reminds me of the captain that opened up the sequence of the 2009 J.J. Abrams. Don't know the actor's name, but he was.
I suspect you are talking about David Schock, or maybe another one. Well, basically, the character is that of the science officer aboard the Witch of Endor, who is from New Paris. And the actor affects a little bit of a French accent.
Mm.
And his is the last line in the trailer.
Mm. Yeah, no, it sounds very effective and sound very, it's great. And it sounded to me like you'd drawn in people from moviedom into this audio production. And it gives it a certain authenticity as well.
Thank you.
A certain depth. No, seriously. I mean, I bought into it straight away. And I thought, I will listen to this. Every episode that comes out, I'll be hanging for the next one to arrive. So, yeah, I'm sold straight away. And I don't
even
know. Yeah. And that's not sycophantic in any way. I'm just literally commenting on what I'm hearing from the trailer. And I think if people go and listen to the trailer, they'll buy into it straight away too.
I can tell you this is so fun. This is the cast is meets all together in a Facebook group. It's a secret Facebook group. Only the cast are members to it. And to them, after I described everything, I wanted to get their ideas about their characters before I really went into the scripts. Because they knew the basics of who the characters were and what the general sense of the plot was going to be. And their feedback, by the way, was extremely helpful and fed into what the story ultimately became, which surprised me. Now, that's how I know it's a good story, because it started doing its own thing. It started insisting on being itself. But as I was writing the episodes in batches and uploading them to the group and people were reading them, the cast was excited. They got really, really interested in saying, oh my God, that happened? And part of it was my own instinct is to set up a stereotype or an expectation and just knock it down so that, you know, we would expect this, and that is exactly is not what happens. And but I think what should happen should make sense. So I was very, very pleased with the reaction I got. And a lot of people were really thrilled when they got episode 18. And they were going, oh my God. I can tell you now, it's going to end on a cliffhanger. In hopes that people want to see a season 2. And then we'll do it. And then we'll do another however many episodes that will be.
And just you have the idea for season 2 already in your head?
Oh, yes. Yes. I know the basic story. I know ultimately how it ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thrilled to say that while writing season 1, the focus of what I'll put it this way. Initially, I thought there was a particular couple, a romantic couple that would be some kind of like the love story of the series. And they're still there. They've got a wonderful story to tell in all this. But they're not the love story. Two other characters became the love story quite without my planning to, and opened up amazing possibilities, dramatic possibilities, which I hope to exploit in season 2.
Fantastic.
It's a broad range of people, and the idea was, you know, I was very, very fortunate. A bunch of people got enthusiastic and helped.
Okay. So another question for you. Obviously, you know the wider arc of the story. But would you honestly say, and we haven't heard anything yet, but would you honestly say that it falls into what you might call classic Star Trek?
I was doing my best to create something that, if, in my opinion, someone gave me the power to make Star Trek, that I could do this and people would say, yes, that's Star Trek. Now, let's make that proviso here. I want to, I was interviewed in a podcast like 7 months ago, and they asked me an interesting question. They asked, what's your favorite Star Trek? Because that's sort of indicative. And also, what's your least favorite Star Trek? Now, I have a tie for my favorite, which is the original series and Deep Space Nine. Because I liked the storytelling and the way those series used characters best. I will also say, I think some of my favorite characters, though, are in Voyager. Just saying. What is my least favorite Star Trek? Next Generation. Because I think it's so formulaic, and they didn't think possibilities through. They didn't pursue dramatic possibilities within the characters. And that is exactly what I did not want to do. So I think some people would complain and say it is too much like Discovery. Although it's not nearly as, I don't think it's nearly as going in a new direction. But it is my sincere attempt to make a genuine Star Trek story. What would be the point of doing something else? If I was going to make my own, I'll make my own.
Hmm.
This is, and by the way, I intend to make my own. I have an idea for an audio series once Chronicle is done, and that will be entirely original. But this is intended to be Star Trek, and I just wanted to, but I wanted to take that seriously and just look at the questions and try to come up with my own answers and then pursue them. I'll mention, for example, two things I really, really wanted to develop, and they're there. First of all, I wanted to know a lot more about the Tellarites. You know, one of the founding members of the Federation, I don't really think we do not know as much about them as we do about the other founding members by a long shot. Instead, we just get this stereotype of just argumentative pig people.
Yes. Well, they bring home the bacon. Sorry.
So one of the major characters, in fact, the first officer of the Witch of Endor, is a Tellarite.
Okay.
And we get to know him, and he's a very interesting person. Get to know a lot through him. We get to hear a lot more about the Tellarites. And once I started thinking about, there's a detail I came up that I adored, because I thought about it. Says, if from what we understand, Tellarites are argumentative because they value free speech so much. They want a free exchange of ideas. This is sacred to them. And it only by hammering things out until everybody agrees that you really find out, you have a good chance of figuring out the truth. Everybody's opinion is respected. Everybody's opinion is challenged. And one of the things I thought about is, how do you teach? How do teachers teach in an environment like that? And then I also know that one of the things about the Tellarites is that their sense of hearing is actually better than their sight. So I decided that the tradition among Tellarites is, when you're formally teaching, your lectures are to be sung. They're music. They're put to music and sung. Because Tellarites would regard music as something you don't interrupt, you listen. Then you can argue about it, but you listen to the music. So there is that little detail. The other thing was, I have one of the characters is an Andorian. And I was kind of charmed by the idea. This is not canon, but it's in the novels, that Andorians have four genders. And I said, well, how's that supposed to work? And there's a description. And I go, okay, I can see that. But I was also trying to figure out, why? So part of what I thought in my own head was that Andorians must have evolved from some kind of hive species where the gender differences were extreme. And the current species, you know, the comparatively is very, very minor. But it also puts a position that in our age, that this became a source of way to explore a little bit the question of gender identities, of the idea of a non-binary, of who, you know, what are you? What pronouns do you choose to use? And what might you change? I was also assuming that originally Andorians needed four to reproduce. But they have the science to build starships. I'm sure their biology allows them to have children however they want now. And I imagine that, you know, for them, a gender reassignment surgery is something is an out-of-office procedure. Just, yeah. You come to the doctor's office and you just, you know, why don't you just use a transporter? I don't know. But anyway, that would be true of everything. So that there is a question that comes up of this particular Andorian and what gender are they? And
well, it depends on the day of the week.
Well, not for this one. This one has retained their gender.
I see.
I mean, they could change, but that doesn't mean everybody would. It's just it's perfectly possible. And there's no taboo associated with it. And it's the sort of thing that Star Trek, at its best, often does bring up major social and even philosophical or political issues of the day. And I think it sometimes does it best when it... I think sometimes the issues are best if there's no answer given, but it's also sometimes best if it's a process of we know the answer, and the whole, in this case, Star Trek, the world, just takes that as a given. Mm. The idea of... of course, you don't need money, for example. Okay, how would that work? I have no idea.
Me neither. I don't know.
Wildly different society that would evidently be... And I could believe that they might have a society that is post-scarcity. Post-scarcity is not infinite resources, just that everybody has enough. Hmm. And frankly, if you can easily and cheaply, relatively, combine matter and antimatter, any amount you want... If you could combine matter and antimatter at will, you have all the energy you need.
Yeah, all you need is the desire to create.
Yeah, yeah. At that point. Once you've got that, you've got replicators. Yeah, you've got post-scarcity.
Can I just ask, going back to your gender-changing Andorian, are you going to inject aspects of that into your storyline? Like somebody will come up as, who are you today, or... what's going on over here? Or
it is there, but not in terms of changing gender, but in the fact that this character does not have what we would recognize as a male or a female.
Right.
And that is just something that is there and is treated, I think, very nicely. But I find myself not wanting to reveal how.
Oh, no, don't do that.
I was very proud. The only time somebody is going to start lecturing is when there's an issue people want to talk about. And that's not a lecture, that's going to be a debate. And other people will eventually get into some arguments about issues. But this is the sort of thing that wouldn't be an issue. Hmm. It's just something that, oh, do I know about this?
Hmm.
And I might ask some questions. And then we get to see it from it. We just see something that we don't, just a little aspect of this society that hasn't been explored before.
Okay. It's, so going back to your episodic recordings, are they all in the can, so to speak, or are you still working through your...
still in post-production. You're still putting it all together.
So when you launch in January, how they'll come out once a month, once every 2 weeks?
I think tentatively what I'm going to do is release it in probably three acts. That for a certain time, these episodes will be coming once a week.
Uh-huh.
Then there'll be a hiatus, and then there's another cluster of episodes will come once a week. And a hiatus, then another cluster of episodes once a week. The hiatus, hopefully, would be like a month. Once I have all the pieces together, it really isn't that hard. You have to sit down, take the time. But I've been putting pieces together for a long, long time. I didn't necessarily do it. One of the cast members was shocked that I wasn't doing it in chronological order. I said, no, I've got these characters, so I'm going to do all of their scenes, the scenes they have together. So I'll do that as soon as I can. So there's a lot of piecemeal. And at this moment, there is no one episode that is complete, mostly because a cast member had to go to the hospital. They're out now. And they're finishing their recordings. And then someone else made a mistake in a recording. Mm-hmm. And it was a recording. I couldn't cover it. I said, no, you have to record it again. Mm-hmm. That's the second time that has happened. The first time happened in the early part when someone mispronounced a word.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I just can't justify that mispronunciation.
No, well, you're the boss, so
yeah. So
you know that's what it's all about.
Just do that. Can you do that line again? Can you do that?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, I didn't get it. Okay, it's fine. And it's coming along very nicely, very nicely. And along the way, I'm finding that I write too much too, so I'm cutting lines as I Yeah, we don't need that.
So, do you see in some way that Chronicle is the future of Star Trek audio broadcasting? It's up there with some others, but it's going in its own direction. Do you see it has a particular style and a genre of its own?
Well, of course, I'm not the first audio series. I've listened to others of Star Trek. I nurture the slight hope that maybe I will excite others into making audio series when they realize it's so much cheaper than making a film. But of course, then you lose the visual element completely. So you have to replace that with, you have to be, you know, your scripts really need to be packed with information, with drama almost every single second. And you have to use the medium very carefully. Like, for example, I don't think it would be tricky to do a battle scene in an audio series. You probably would have to try to emulate like submarine movies.
Mm.
See what I mean? But I hope it will be seen as a good story. And that some people might actually feel that use it as a yardstick. I would love that. And if it sparks controversy, great. I expect some people to be very upset. Because when I first mentioned the most basic idea of it, some people got very upset. Which is fine. That is fine. If you're making stories and nobody gets mad at you, you haven't written that good a story.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. If you're just going to follow the herd, you're just going to get lost in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. So you have to stand mm-hmm. out like your Vulcan standing out. Okay. Well, David, we're coming to the end of our discussion. I would like to pick up this discussion about 6 months after we've heard the first four or five episodes going out.
Mm-hmm.
And to catch up on where the story is going and perhaps even catch up on what fan reaction is. And to talk even further. But what I've heard so far is incredible. And
oh, thank you.
And then for the third time in this podcast, I would encourage people to find the trailer on YouTube and have a listen. Get excited and get prepared because this is going to be a thrill and a ride through the universe like you've never heard before. And I'm saying that sincerely. It is awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And yeah, but I mean, that's all the more reason I'm going to spread this podcast as much as I possibly can.
That's it. Okay.
So we do, by the way, have a YouTube channel and a Facebook group dedicated to Chronicle. There will be visuals with the audio, with the seasons, and we're not talking about, I'm not talking about even trying to do like cartoons or anything like that. It's simply a matter that I've gotten the rights from an artist on DeviantArt that, for example, to use his ship interiors that he designed for The Witch of Endor, so that we'll, you know, we'll show the bridge when there's a scene taking place there. But the ship doesn't have to have a 10 forward, it has 10 starboard. So here's their 10 starboard, and here's, you know, their engine room or this thing. And it's things like that. I have received, by the way, an extraordinary gift from a fan who's also a friend. His name is David Schroeder on Facebook. He has a Facebook group called 10 Forward. He's a huge Star Trek fan. And he knows a lot of people who like to design their own ships. And he is persuading, evidently, one of their best artists he knows, a gentleman named Shay Walker, to either do a rendering of the Witch of Endor in flight or showing one of their shuttlecraft. Because part of this is there is a new type of runabout. You know, the former runabouts are all named after rivers. This is the Puerto Rico class, and it's named after islands. And this is next stage. These are much stronger and much more versatile than the runabouts we saw on Deep Space Nine. And there are some other secrets, but you'll find out when you see the show.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if I can just say for now, David McDowell Blue, thank you so much for joining us here on Continuing Mission. I am so sorry that we have to kind of bring our conversation to an end, but time is defeating us. And but we will come back because there is so much more to learn. But we'll wait until we hear the characters in action. And then we will come back and talk again. So I can't wait. And I'm looking forward to that date already.
Me too.
So there you are.
I can't wait to say exactly what day in January it will be, but I don't know.
Yeah. No, we can announce it. So for people who follow information on Trek FM, we can be found through our own Facebook page, and which is called the Babel Conference on Trek FM. And you can find that by typing B-A-B-E-L into Facebook search, and you'll find the Babel Conference. And everybody who's anybody contributes on there over the various podcasts that we carry on Trek FM, but with relevant to the information that you're providing and relevant to your production, we'll be able to announce through our fans what's happening there. So yeah, so that'll be good. So thank you yet again. I'm going to shut us down now. Computer says end program, and we will be talking again in the near future.
I look forward to it so much.
Thank you, David. Well, it's been great fun talking with David McDowell Blue today about his new series. Now, if you wish to look that up, you can find it on YouTube. Just search for Chronicle series and you'll get all of the details you need there. But our show is not the only thing that's been happening on Trek FM this week. Here's what else has been happening on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
I bought it when it first came out. I played it for like 2 or 3 days and I went, what is going on? Am I missing something? Is just, I'm not a good player. So And then I checked on the reviews online and everyone agreed that it was not a good game. And we were all correct.
Literary Treks.
But that's why I bring this back around, why it was so cool, the Klingon battlecruisers, to distinguish them not being the smooth-sided, cheapy little things from the series. Gene gives them this, you know, never is this uttered on screen, but every little tech nerd knows what a Katinga, you know, Klingon battlecruiser is. And it's only because he came up with that, Gene came up with that word and gave it to them in the novel. It's not in the movie. You know, nobody says, Captain, we were picking up three Klingon Takinga heavy battlecruisers on the, you know, Epsilon 9.
Earl Grey.
Come on. Like, when you go on a date, you're going out to dinner and you're, that's like the standard date number one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like,
maybe things are different in the 24th
maybe.
Century.
Maybe.
But okay, all right.
I mean, you could be assuming this is the first time they shared breakfast together.
Maybe. That's a wild assumption.
Maybe they're right.
And introducing our newest show, The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
Mike, I wanted to make a comment about something that you said about being mostly the middle for a lot of these comic book franchises. It actually makes me think Star Trek, in a way, is something that keeps going and going, 764 installments now, without a specific end necessarily. Maybe it'll come someday. But
These are the Voyages was a love letter to the fans. What are you talking about, Justin?
You know what I mean.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
You can check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, well, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link. Now, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, which I previously mentioned, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us email, you can use the form on our website at trekfm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the name of the show and that will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. As we leave you today, we obviously have to send out a huge thank you to our executive producers, who are Ken Tripp and Matthew Rushing. And we'd also like to extend a warm thanks to Christopher Jones, who is our founder and publisher of the network. You can also help us keep all our shows coming to you each week by becoming a patron of the network on Patreon. You can visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. Available through our special patrons website, PatronZone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. I'm Tony Robinson, the host here at Continuing Mission. I hope you've really enjoyed the show and we look forward to talking with you again. So until the next time, live long and prosper.